Toide Torah Manishta Chof Vav Cheshvan Tovshim Pei Hey Harav Aritzumim.
Good morning, thank you again for the opportunity to start my day with some Torah Shes Adiri Torah Barabim. The topic of today's share is a check money, and really I want to this is an older topic, and more contemporary would be to talk about cryptocurrencies money, but it would take probably half an hour to explain what cryptocurrencies are and how they work, and but it has definitely caused people to re-examine the topic of what is money, what is defined as money, and what are the halachic nafkaminas. So broadly speaking, in the terms of a classic economist, they ask what is money. So they have three categories when they want to test something as money. They have the idea of it being tender, that people will sell things for it. Unit of currencies. People quantify a value in it, and it's a store of value. So for example, if you lived in a culture or economy where people prized goats very highly, and you could buy anything for goats. So you could buy your wheat, bushels of wheat for two goats to get X amount of kilos of wheat. So we want to know, are goats money? So we'd say, well, do people sell things for it? Well, they do sell certain things for it, but certain things probably you can't buy for them. Do people quantify value in them? Well, people don't normally say this is worth two goats, three goats. Is it a store of value? Well, it's not a very good store of value because your goat is going to die. Now moving on to when people used gold. Gold as money. People used to sell things for money. It was considered tender. People may have rated their currency in it, units of currency, and a store of value. Presumably it was good. Moving on from that became the asset-backed currencies. The currencies were backed by central reserves who would hold the asset, the gold, whatever it is. And now we moved on today to what's called fiat currencies. That the currency itself, a piece of paper that we have, doesn't really have any value. It's not linked to the gold reserve, not on the gold standard, and the reason why currency is accepted is because people accept it as legal tender. You have to accept it as legal tender. It's considered a unit of currency, and as a store of value, it's also considered not a bad store of value, but in the long term it's probably not a brilliant store of value, because if you keep your money in £50 notes, how do you keep your money in £50 notes? Today they'd be worthless. You could still change them, but it gets to a stage where it gets devalued by inflation, the notes aren't accepted as tender anymore. But then the question is, halakhically, how do you treat a banknote? So most people accept that a banknote is cash. Can you do pinyin ha-ben with banknotes? Do you need pieces of silver? Things that you need, kesef, that you need money, can you use a banknote? You rip up a banknote, or if you have a forged banknote, a very good forgery. So if the whole thing is that people would accept this and sell things for it, it's not in the value of the piece of paper itself. So is there anything wrong with me passing it on? So that's in terms of generally how we look at money. And the stage after that, as I'll talk about very broadly on a basic analysis, is how checks are classified in halacha and some of the basic nafka minas. So, is a check money? A check is definitely not money. A check is not something that people sell things in value of checks. People don't use it as tender, but you can. We can come on to nafka minas between Eretz Yisrael and other countries. Yes.
If you sign the check, it is money.
If you sign the check, and you can use the check now. So we'll talk about some. I'll tell you some of the nafka minas. I'll tell you some of the approaches, and we'll go back. So that, the marshal. Someone writes a check for a bar mitzvah boy, and 6 months go by, and the bar mitzvah boy, too busy with his bar mitzvah, has forgotten to bank the check. The check can no longer be banked. Does he have a right to go back to the writer or the drawer of the check, as he's called, and say, I need a new check, please? You have to give me a new check. Or the person says, listen, I gave you the check, you bank it, fine. You don't bank it, your problem. Or there was no money in the account, the check bounced. Does he have a right to demand a new check?
Can
To change it, well, if you're not allowed to, if you don't have a right to demand it, you can't alter the check. Yeah, if you're not authorized, another nafkamina, for example, would be the halacha says that if you lend somebody money and you ask for your money back, so now the din is shoveh kesef is like kesef. He can say, if you don't have cash, I can say I'm paying you back in shoveh kesef. These items are of value, the same value of the money that you take these items. But if he has cash, then the lender has a right to insist to be repaid in cash. I lent you cash, I've got a right to demand cash. He hasn't got a right to demand that the borrower sells his items to achieve that cash. The borrower, if he has no cash, can pay back the shoveh kesef, can pay back, as long as obviously the items are the same value, and the question of how you evaluate them will be obviously a question in itself. But where an item has a clear resellable value, and he says, here you go, I'm paying you. The question was once, the guy wanted to pay. He says, got no money. So he says, pay me merchandise. So he says, yeah, okay, fine. I make you like mini bars of soap for hotels. So I'll give you 50,000 mini bars of soap as payment. Okay, how do you evaluate that? Is it going to be a flash sale? Is it going to be per item? Okay, that's a separate question. But if you have cash, you haven't got right to defer to insist that he accepts shoveh kesef. So what happens if he says, where's my money? He says, fine, I'll write you out a check. Does he have a right to say, no, I gave you cash, I want cash? Or does he? Or can he say, no, cash is payment? Now the nafkamina, you have to pay your workers. Lo yisodin, you gave them a check. Is that considered payment? Yeah. You have to pay him on the day. He wants to be paid. He's demanding the payment. And you give him a check. Accept the form of payment. So. Another nafkamina, which the poskim talk about a lot, is the gabbish shmitah. If you owe somebody money before shmitah, shmitah cancels that debt. That's halacha shmitah. It cancels it, annuls the debt. You don't have to pay it back. You're not allowed to pay it back. You're not allowed to ask for it back. You're not allowed to pay. He's not allowed to. Well, the whole set of halachas apply to some owes money. The basic halacha is the debt is cancelled. You cannot claim that debt back. What happens, someone owed you money for shmitah, and the person who owed you money gave you a check, which you haven't yet banked. Now shmitah comes along. So the chayv is gone, but you have the check. So you're holding on to this check. Can you now deposit the check? Is that the same as claiming the chayv back? Or no? Once he's giving you the check, he has discharged his liability to you. He's no longer got a chayv to you. You have a claim on the bank. We're talking about not necessarily sure whether banks are Jewish, whether it itself is a separate problem of having a debt against the bank. You can bank that check. So there are three main basic approaches in the poskim of how to categorize and how to approach dealing with a check. And each one is not without its own issues, and there's some more sophisticated approaches have been developed, but we'll talk about the three basic approaches and some of the, again, some complicated cases. We'll talk about the most, try and understand the initial approach. So one approach put forward was in relation to the Issa of Ribis. Issa of Ribis, obviously, you're not allowed to take back more than you lent. So that was very common practice in Eretz Yisrael, that people will write out a check, they'll go to a money lender, a money cashier, and the cashier will give them cash on the spot for this check at a reduced rate. They'll don't cover commission, 2%, whatever it is. So you'll give them a check for 100 shekel, and the money changer will give him 98 shekel. Right? So, in effect, he's received 98 shekel cash, and he's not paid out anything yet other than this check, 400 shekel. The fellow's going to go to the bank, and he's going to get 100 shekel, which is coming out of my bank account. I've given a check drawn on my account. I've got 98 shekel, and when he goes to the bank, he's going to get 100 shekel from my account. So do I look at that as if I've received 98 shekel as a loan, which I've been repaying as 100 shekel, or not? So Rabbi Yaakov Bloy has a sefer called Bris Yehuda, a classic work, a modern day classic on Hilchos Rivis. And he brings that there was such a situation, similar situation, in the times of the Tshuvas Chikri Lev. Chikri Lev writes there that people would find themselves traveling on business and they'd be short on cash. So what they would do is, they would get someone lend them or give them the cash. They would write out a document which is payable. They have money by some commercial agent of theirs, wherever it is. And the fellow can draw out more money than he's paid out based on this letter. And the Chikri Lev says that at first approach, it would seem like this is ribis. You're borrowing money here, you're paying back your money over there, someone's holding the money for you over there. So the Chikri Lev says like this. When the person holding money for me is holding a pikodon, then it becomes a problem. That means as follows. You have a safe deposit box, and you put your cash in that safe deposit box. Your cash stays in that safe deposit box. And you say to somebody, here's the key. I would like you to hold this key and look after it. Look after the key. I may send you a message from time to time. You recognize my handwriting. You recognize my signature. To open up the box and take some money out and give it to somebody. But those notes in those box, those are my notes. And the person holding the key has no right to touch them, access them, spend them, do anything with them. They're my notes. Those notes lying in that safe deposit box, they're my notes. What's the person who's holding the key? He's a shomer. The notes are a pikodon. He is a shomer. I am a mafkid. And he has no right to touch them. So then, that will present a problem of ribis. Why? Because they're my notes. I'm borrowing money from somebody, and when he goes to this fellow with the letter that says, please release funds to this amount, he's actually asking for your money. You've given him your money back. But in the case of the Chikri Lev, and in the case of commercial banking, that's not the case. When you put money in the bank, people think the bank is holding my money. The bank is not holding your money. The bank has an account, has a ledger, which says you deposit this money. The bank spends the money. When you put £50 in the bank, you don't get your £50 note back. You'll go to the cash machine. You might get it back in 20s. You may not even have put £50 in the bank in the first place. Someone has transferred, done a transfer from their account to your account. You're not getting back your money. They're not holding your notes. There's no £50 note which says, this note is Ari Tumim's in his safe box. There is no note. It doesn't exist. It exists. You have an account. They owe you the money. They spend your money. If you even put cash into the bank, they have the right to spend the money. They spend the money. They lend that money out to other customers. They invest that money. They do whatever they want with that money. There may be regulated. There may be a certain amount of reserves they're allowed to. They have to have at any one time in order to prevent banks running out. But the point is, the money in your account is not your money. So what is the relationship between me and the bank? The relationship between the bank is not a shomer and a mafkid. You might call it a bank deposit, but it's not a pikodon. It's a chayv. It's a havor. The bank owes you money, says the Chikri Lev. So what am I doing? When I give a letter to the person who has given me the money, what I'm doing is, I'm saying, that fellow owes me money. I have a chayv against him. I am transferring that chayv from me to you. So that chayv, that claim of credit that I have against him, he is now the creditor. I have given you the right to that chayv. I have assigned you the right to that chayv. Similarly, he says, the idea we find in the Gemara. Mechira shtar chayv. There's an example. We have this in the Gemara. We have the concept of mechira shtar chayv. That you have shtar chayv. Someone owes you money. and you have a shtar documenting that he owes you money, and you transfer that shtar to somebody else, that's the mechira shtar chayv. And you can sell that shtar at a discounted rate. You're allowed to sell it. Why? Because it's not considered that he's lending me money. It's considered that I have an asset. My asset is the debt against whoever owes me money. I've transferred that asset, that debt, into the hands of somebody else. It's a sale of an asset. But he stipulates that, number one, there's a due process. How do you sell a shtar chayv? Kesiva or mezira? There's certain ways that has to be done. It has to follow the correct form. Number two, it has to be irrevocable. It has to be, you can't rescind, you can't ask for this back. And number three, there's no achrayus. That means I'm not accepting achrayus. And when you sell a shtar chayv, part of the process, part of the reason why it's discounted is because there's a certain element of risk accepted by the buyer. When you buy an item, there's a certain amount of risk that the buyer accepts. If, as long as the item is not faulty, as long as it was true at the time of the sale, it's genuine. If the item, when you buy an item, if it breaks down later, it was a good item, wasn't faulty, then fine, they're part of that price. You bought it, it's yours. What happens to you, what happens to it now is yours. There may be a warranty, there may be a guarantee some amount of time, but essentially you bought it, and that's what you're buying. When you buy a shtar chayv, the buyer is accepting an element of risk. That means, I'm telling you I got this shtar chayv, why am I selling to you cheap? There's two reasons why I'm selling to you cheap. Number one is because it's not due immediately, so you're going to have to wait to get your money. And number two, there's the element of risk. That you know that the person who owes the money may well default on it. So, if these conditions are fulfilled, says the Chikri Leiv, the Chikri Leiv allowed it. Says the Bris Yehuda, that this is comparable, the Chikri Leiv is much comparable to our to our shtaros, to our checks. Sorry. Our checks, why? Because I have a debt against the bank, I write a check and I give it to you. Effectively, what I said to it is that you can collect the debt that the bank has to me. I've transferred their debt to you. He says, what about all the conditions the Chikri Leiv puts into place? He says, yeah, it's true. You have to have a kinyan which is effective. He says, a kinyan which is effective, are those that object? And they said, well, that fails over here. Because writing out a check and signing it is not an effective way of transferring a shtar chayv. There needs to be a kesiva, there needs to be a mesira. Says the Bris Yehuda, we can replace that kinyan. Nowadays, there's a minhag ha-seichrim where you have accepted commercial transactions taking place based on this kinyan, that can also be considered a kinyan. It's also a question itself, how do you understand commercial transactions? How do kinyanim take place nowadays? So, yes. So he says, the debt is transferred from the bank. And therefore he says, it has to be that the achrayus is on, a certain degree of risk is accepted by the buyer of that check. You want to discount the check, I buy a check, you have to accept a Christ. What a Christ do you have to accept? What you have to accept is that if the person who borrowed the money defaults, then you've got no claim recourse back to the person who issued the check. That means if the bank were not to pay out, then the writer of the check would not be responsible, which most people are willing to accept that risk. The likelihood of a bank not paying out, fine. If it's faulty, if it turns out that there's a problem with the actual check, you never had money in the account at the time, etc., etc., so then that's not a problem with the transferring of the chayv. That's a problem with the check that you issued. You issued me a fake shtar. You issued me a shtar which is problematic, so that would be not qualified by that. But the problem with that is, others have a question with this approach, Bichal. Others have a question with the approach. One of the conditions is that it has to be, when you sell a shtar chayv, you've got no right to ask for it back. You've got no right to ask for it back. You sold it. When you issue a check to somebody, you can issue a stop order. You can tell the bank, please do not honour this check. Whether you have to have a reason or not may be dependent on what jurisdiction you're in. In Eretz Yisrael, so that's what the Pesach is going to say, in Eretz Yisrael, you're not allowed to actually stop a check. The Bris Yehuda was written about the Israeli system. Yeah? You're not, it's illegal to stop a check. But in other jurisdictions, you can stop a check. If you can stop the check, that means I haven't sold you a shtar chayv. If I sold you a shtar chayv, no way I can stop you collecting it. The very fact that I can stop it, that's a raya that I haven't transferred you the chayv. Another objection is, what happens if the writer of the check dies? Yeah, right. You stop a check, yeah? If someone stops a check, and you got this check which has been stopped, who do you go to court to? You cannot take the bank to court. You take him to court. Your claim is against him. That means he owes you money. He's giving you the check. If it's a shtar chayv and he's transferred the debt, yeah? So then, in the classic case of the Gemara, Rechiya shtar chayv, if he transfers the chayv, so you have to claim from the person who owed the money in the first place. You can't go back to the person who sold you the check, because you transferred that debt. He says to you, I've been discharged. I've given you an item of value. This is not the same, clearly. The fact that you have a claim against the person who owes you the money is a raya. Forget it. It's a raya. You don't have a claim against the bank. It's a raya. It's not a mechir shtachrif. That's one of the objections. The other objection is, if the writer of the check dies, if it's a mechir shtachrif, it's nothing to do with the writer anymore. He's out of the picture. He's transferred his debt to somebody else. But there was a case, well known, Baal Stocker wrote checks out, and shortly afterwards he died. The big shayla. Now, can you now deposit his check still? Yeah? The bank will honor it for up to 10 days. Yeah? Are you allowed to bank the checks or not? If it's a transfer of debt, so then the writer's out of the picture. He owes you the money. It's a claim now against his estate. He's no longer alive, but it will be a claim against the estate, like any debt that a person leaves behind Achamei Ve'esrim. It's a claim against their estate, and therefore you can make the claim. If it's not a transfer of debt, so the debt, it may remain a neder to Tzedakah. A neder to Tzedakah, someone dies, the Yoshim are not mukhiv to fulfill it. The neder is chal on the person himself. It's not chal on his nechos, it's not chal on his estates. So therefore there will be no chiv to fulfill it. The other approach, in the complete contrast, is that a check, you look at the wording of the check. A check is purely a letter of instruction to the bank. And nothing has happened. You're telling the bank, please release these funds from my account and give them to so-and-so and adjust my account accordingly. But it's not a transfer. Nothing has actually taken place. It's simply a letter of instruction. That's all it is. Nothing has happened. A massive nafkimina between these two approaches is Linyan Shmita that we spoke about. Linyan Shmita. If someone owes you money, and you've given them a check, if it's a letter of instruction, Pshat is, you still owe them money, you've given them a letter where they can go and collect their money from the bank, but once Shmita has come, the Chayv is no longer valid. If the Chayv is no longer valid, so no longer allowed to collect money from the bank to pay off that Chayv. If it's a transfer of the debt, it's an asset in itself, so the debt has been discharged, Shmita doesn't cancel it, you can bank the check and claim it. Kinyan Kesef. I want to talk a little bit about Kinyan Kesef. What's Kinyan Kesef? Kinyan Kesef, time of the Gemara, you could buy karka. Karka nigna b'kesef b'shtar chazaka. What does that mean? That means someone sells a property. As soon as you do any part payment, you're koina that property. Min hastam, unless you specified otherwise, you pay one pruta. You're coined, we say the sale is agreed. Here is payment of a pruta. You're paid one coin. You now own the property. And the rest is a debt which has to be paid up. But the transfer of title is affected by the receipt of that consideration of cash. Nowadays, it's not common. It could be done in theory. But generally, when people buy property, it's not a Kinyan Kesef. The question is, what is the Kinyan Kesef? Shtar Chazaka, we don't have Shtar either. The Shtar that we have also, the Shtar of the Gemara has a very prescribed formula and content. It has to have a certain nusach. It has to belong to the magna. The magna is giving it to the koine, his piece of paper. We don't do that either. How we transfer property is a good question, but we don't use kesef for property. In theory, it's possible, because the Gemara says it's true even in places where they don't normally use kesef, and kesef min hastam should be koina, but here it isn't, because in this place we know accepted minig is that we always write shtoros or whatever, so the kesef isn't koina. But if you're mafarish, if you stipulate clearly that I want the kinyan to take effect with kesef, it's effective with kesef. So if you get two people, kesef shvos, two people in the mikvah, and they agree to do a property transfer, and they say, yo, mekedesh reden dot tzifil, loma machna kinyan gleich, and it gives him £50 to make a kinyan, there's no reason why it shouldn't be effective. But in normal day-to-day transactions, business transactions, the kesef is not a factor for kinyan. So therefore, the discussion, the gabi kesef and karka, isn't so relevant. But the gabi metaltalin, Legabe buying everyday assets, so normally we don't rely on kesef to be koina midrabonon. This is the koina, we don't allow kesef to be koina. What about meshicha? We rely on meshicha works. That's how we normally allow koina mitaltanin. Says there are places though, which says the Mishnah Berurah says you should make sure to be careful you pay kesef. Why? Dalad minim, for example. Dalad minim, you need to be lachem. Matzah, Mishbura says, we're makpid, it should be lochem. How are you koina your matzah? How are you koina your esrog? So if you bring it to your house, say that, but what happens if you didn't bring it to his house and he's got a mashicha? Mashicha is only a kinyan rabbonon. So you have to make sure you're paid more than that. More than that. Even in a case where you have done a kinyan, there's another halacha that Mr. Berurah brings down. And that's the halacha of nafik va'ayel azuzi. That a person can render a transaction void based on his urgency for the need of cash. That means, true, you can sell something and you can do a kinyan and the payment can be deferred as a debt. But when the person shows and there's indications that the sale was done because of his urgency, the need of cash, and then you don't pay him, that voids the whole sale of Mafreya. So you've done a mashicha, you brought it into your chot, so you've been kind of, you're at dalam minim, and then you don't pay him.
You pay by check, but abba minim, it's not yours.
So that's the point. If you don't pay, if you paid by check, is it a payment or not? So again, if it's a transfer of a shtar choiv, you'd have to know, can you buy things with a shtar choiv? Can you buy things with a shtar choiv? It's a separate discussion in itself. It's a machloikus in the Rishonim when you buy it. But even if you bought it, and you paid him for it, you paid him a pruta for it, so you're coining your kesef, you paid your kesef. But if you give him a check, and that check later bounces, you might have the problem of nothing via azuzi. You've rendered the whole sale of the mafreya. It's true you did a kinyan, and you owe the money. But the fact that he needed the cash urgently, and you've given him something which isn't, which was a payment, which is then banked, which was then defaulted, then that may render the whole sale of the mafreya. When Mama scratched the surface, as you can see, there's a lot here to be discussed in the post-game. There's a lot of nafkaminas. There's a lot of cases where people have bank checks and turned out people are given checks for schayra and they're not being banked, or they pass on to someone else and he's got schayra and the other guys have banked it. And all the nafkaminas, they're all dependent, the soidus of the starting point, the building blocks is what is the check, how does it work, and how do you apply it to these cases.
If the check doesn't bounce, it's okay. If the check doesn't bounce, it's true after Yom Tov.